In the new book, A Religion of One's Own, A Guide to Creating a Personal Spirituality in a Secular World, Thomas More, bestselling author of the classic Care of the Soul and Dark Nights of the Soul, proposes a return to religion, a radical, dynamic, and fluid religion tailor-made to our unique values and spiritual needs. Drawing from a diverse wealth of traditions ranging from Greek mythology to St. Francis, More urges readers to begin by never again sensing any conflict between one tradition and another, and follows their bliss, working intuitively to create a religion that is truly their own. Again, the name of the book is A Religion of One's Own. It is published by Gotham Books, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Thomas More back to the program. Always a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Joe.
Let me ask you of how you started this, of really looking, and to not read into the subtitle too much, but to look at this secular world and how we can get through.
Yes, well, it seems that the secularism is getting stronger all the time. I mean, there's always the opposite reaction, the kind of fundamentalist religion. But the secularism is really getting strong. Where I see it is in areas like neuroscience, where the science is wonderful. We're achieving so much, and yet it sort of takes over for what used to be philosophy and theology and tries to answer questions that are quite deep and does so in ways that are definitive. You know, it's like the secular sciences really want to say this is a truth you can depend on and be wary of anything else. And, you know, that doesn't sit too well with me.
There is a, it seems, and you talk about this in the book, that we have become somewhat wary of discussing religion in polite dinner conversation, and which has sort of always been a way, right? Politics and religion were sort of the subjects that perhaps weren't openly discussed. And we certainly have gotten over our aversion to screaming about politics. Why religion, do you think?
Well, religion is really much more personal than we think. That's really the point of my book, you know, that a lot of people think of religion. If you hear the word, you think of a huge organization or a very long ancient tradition, and you think of rules and demands on you, and many of don'ts, you know, don't do this and don't do that. I think that's part of it, that's how we think of religion, but actually it's really quite deep. It's connected to our childhood experiences, at least for many people. And, you know, those experiences of childhood and family go so deep, and they're with us throughout our adult lives. I don't think we're quite aware of that. So I think that a lot of the reasons why we're reticent to talk about religion is that it means so much to us. But we're not too sure about that meaning. We're not aware of it, but it's there and operating within us.
How do you react to the term organized religion?
Well, you know, I really love the organized religions, the traditions. I've been involved with organized religion all my life. I left home when I was 13 to become a monk, you know, and study for the Catholic priesthood. And then I got a PhD in religion. And, you know, it's just been something I've loved. But myself, personally, when I left the Catholic monastic life, I left organized religion pretty much. And so if you looked at my life today, personally, you wouldn't see much religion in it. But the way I look at it, everything I do is religious. And that's another point of this book, that our secular life can be much more sacred than we think if we just have the intention and awareness about it.
Do you see the words religious and spiritual as interchangeable?
No, I don't. I really sort of went out on a limb to call this book A Religion of One's Own. A lot of people advise me to call it A Spirituality of One's Own. But I think spirituality is more vague. I want to say really here that what religions in the past have given us, we can now do for ourselves. I want to make that connection to the religions. Also, I want to say that this is about an intentional, regular practice that where we can learn from the traditions and from other sources how to live our daily lives in a way where they are truly religious. I mean, think about it. Maybe you know people who don't go to church but are very religious. You'd call them religious anyway. I give a lot of examples of people like that in this book. And so I'd rather call it religious and religion than to call it more vaguely spiritual.
What do you lose in not having that place to go, the church or the synagogue or the temple? And what do you lose from not having that where you're creating the ritual as opposed to something that is, quote-unquote, time-honored?
Well, I don't think it's a loss, really, because I would hope that the churches and the synagogues and the mosques will remain and thrive. It's just that they would have a different feel to them, and they have a different purpose. I think that the problem we've had so far is you have to be a member of one religion or another. That either or has been so destructive and has really made things so bad. Because these various traditions really, I don't think they all say the same, but they really harmonize. They go together extremely well. But we've had a tradition, I don't know what it is, we've had a habit in the past of fights, you know, and kind of turf battles among the religions. And I think we can give that up. There's no need for that. But I don't think we have to throw out the religions for that reason. I'd like to be able to choose, and I do actually in my own life, I'd like to be able to choose to go to, let's say, a Catholic church and to a synagogue and to some other spiritual community, not as a member, but as someone who is looking to enrich my own spiritual life. And then that practice, maybe not steady, but that experience of these different communities and organizations and rituals would become part of my own practice. For example, I go to a Catholic monastery rather frequently in Ireland, and I've been a monk, so they just let me become a monk for a while. You know, I go in and live with the monks.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not a member. I don't stay there forever. And I might be, as I am today, I might be consulting with a rabbi. So I love that kind of approach to where we can be very respectful of the different traditions and realize how much they have to offer, but we don't have to sell ourselves to them.
When we are, as the book goes into, of creating this personal spirituality, of creating this personal religion, Do you feel that most of us know and have the strength to be able to create something that we can adhere to that brings us to a better and to a higher place in the sense that we're not making it easy on ourselves?
Oh, no, I think it's harder. It's much more difficult because the responsibility is on yourself than as an individual person. You don't just sit there passively and let people, you know, tell you what to think and what to believe and what
right.
to do. For example, when it comes to ethical decisions, and that's part of a religion of one's own, I think those ethical decisions are much more difficult, and you have to struggle with them to decide. For example, you know, if I'm working for a company that is doing things that I don't consider ethical, can I keep working with them? How do you make that decision? That's not easy. And so you work at it and struggle, and you try to create over time and ethics that you can live with. And it may not be the same ethics as your neighbor has, but it's one that you've worked out for yourself with a great deal of struggle. I think the feeling of responsibility there is much more challenging than to just say, okay, I'm going to be a, you know, whatever, follow a church and do what they say and feel good about it. This is not really feel-good religion. This is, and it's not easy. It's taking responsibility yourself for your spiritual life and doing it in very practical, concrete ways.
And I didn't mean to indicate that it was easier. My mm-hmm. question was more about whether that fundamentally we know, don't we, of what is inherently good and what will make us better, in the sense that we're not going to develop something, we're not going to create a personal religion that we're going to create something that challenges us.
Yes. Yes, I mean, I can imagine, you know, that you could hear this, and I can understand that, hear this idea of your own religion as something kind of narcissistic and self-absorbed and, you know, kind of, I don't know, like all the complaints we have about navel-gazing, stuff like that. Of course, I don't think of it that way at all. I think what we can do, we learn from the traditions when we take them as freely and joyfully, you know, and really say, like, as I do Zen Buddhism, I've learned a lot from Zen Buddhism, and it's affected my life tremendously. And it's full of joy. No, I don't want to become a member of a Zen monastery somewhere and follow all their rules and submit to their authorities. It's not really what I want. I would like to rather to take as much as I can, and I want it to take it deeply, you know, really study it. I know people complain about cafeteria approach to these things, and I always say I like cafeterias. You know, I like having lots of choices. On the other hand, I agree that it can be done too superficially. So I'm recommending really taking seriously what the religious traditions have to offer and spend some time studying them, or maybe, you know, going to visit some place where you can learn more about them. And gradually over time, that will give you your own religion. I remember Emerson wrote in his notebooks, he once said that every church has a membership of one. I think he meant that even though you have all these people going to the same church, they all do it differently, and they probably, each person probably understands it differently. And that's how I feel about using the traditions. We use them, and we draw as much from them as we can intelligently, but we make them our own.
Thomas Moore is our guest. The name of the book is A Religion of One's Own. It is published by Gotham Books. Are there tenets that really are throughout, meaning that prayer would be a part of any one religion?
Well, you know, I don't know. Now, do you mean like for each individual's religion, would prayer be part of it?
Yes. I mean, there are some things that are universal, that because if we think of it just by using the word spirituality and religion, that we would think of prayer.
Well, yes, in a certain sense, yes, because what I'm suggesting is that the best way, I think, to go about this is to learn a lot about as many different traditions as you can, because one is not enough, really, today. And as you do that, you'll find that there are certain elements you'll find from one tradition to another. So you might find prayer everywhere in the organized religions. And that's your hint to say, well, here's something that's essential. But first of all, you don't have to use the word if you don't like it. A lot of people have negative associations with some of these things. But you could meditate, and you can dialogue with the universe, with the world around you, with nature, with your interior self. The different ways of describing it and practicing it, but ordinarily I would say yes, you probably will find prayer everywhere. And I would suggest doing a kind of prayer, if you want to include that, that really makes sense to you as an adult person. You know, don't just think of prayer as something naive and something children do, or naive people do, but think, how can I be a really sophisticated person and really engage in this thing called prayer? Now, there are places around today and teachers where you could learn some of this, especially in meditation, sort of a meditative prayer. I also recommend following someone like Henry David Thoreau. We learn to pray in a way by just being in the natural world. That was his approach. And the Irish monks did that. You know, they went out into nature. And so nature becomes also one of those elements in most religions that gives you an experience and a taste of the transcendent. So that could be a form of your prayer, just walking in nature.
You talk about imagination in the book and listening to your intuition to be able to imagine something that works for you.
Yes. Imagination is really, I mean, in a deep sense, imagination is really the key. To be able to imagine the world as being sacred instead of secular. Again, Thoreau says, you know, he says that when he takes a bath, it's a sacrament. Well, that may seem, you know, really going too far, but maybe not. He's trying to teach us that the most ordinary things, seen from a certain point of view, that is, with a certain kind of imagination, suddenly you are aware of the depth of their meaning. I always say, you know, when I don't know, my family, we all like to take baths, but we're not dirty. You know, we take a bath because we need it for our souls. You know, we need to relax and we need to enjoy the solitude of a bath and the feel the sensuality of it, maybe. And so that goes very deep. And things that really go deep into us and have that kind of deep meaning are sacramental. They are sacred in a sense. And therefore, something like Thoreau says, something as simple as taking a bath without using any formal religious language about it could be part of your religious practice.
You have a large part in the book about carnal spirits, spirituality and sensuality.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important part, you believe.
Oh, yes. I felt that for so long, probably because I grew up in the Catholic Church, you know, where I was 30 before I heard the word sex, you know. I mean,
right.
It was, you know, there was some anxiety around sexuality, and I never heard that it was good to have a sensual life. So I'm probably compensating a bit, but I really believe strongly that to be a really spiritual person and to have your own religious practice, you've got to reconcile your sexuality with it. So many people, I'm a therapist, you know, so I hear this all the time. So many people go through life with a great many conflicts that come from this difficulty religion has had with sexuality and sensuality with body. And so I think one part of making your own religion today, you have the freedom to get over that problem and for yourself, at least, reconcile your sexuality with your spirituality. And that means realizing how deep your sexuality is and that it's important for you to affirm it in ways that you don't find, you don't have guilt about it, or you can freely and joyfully embrace your sexuality and your physical life as much as your spiritual life. I find a lot of very spiritual people have trouble with their body. Some certain eating disorders can be traced back to this extreme spirituality. So I think it's a crucial, crucial thing. I might add one more thing. If you, a lot of people have been led to believe they should be worried about their sexuality because of their spiritual background. And the trouble with that is that it represses the spiritual urges and needs and desires, and that can lead to anger and violence. So it's a very serious matter. I think it's something very serious that we have to face.
And where does the, if we are creating in our own sense, where do we draw the lines as far of what is appropriate when it comes to our sexuality? Because it can't be a catch-all either of saying, okay, well, this is okay.
Oh, No. I think that what you do when you are more relaxed about your sexuality, and don't have this conflict between it and your spiritual self. I think what you do then is you realize that you can again joyfully, pleasantly, pleasurably live and appreciate the limits on your sexual expression. You may then understand that marriage is really something very, very deep. For example, marriage is something that is very, very deep and part of your religion, and it makes sense to have a church wedding and really, really do it, really make your marriage a spiritual thing where you can be very joyful about your sexuality, but also fully embrace any limitations that it gives you. I see the trouble with the other way of looking at it, where you have a lot of guilt and external suppression and warnings, you know, to be pure and all that kind of thing. When you come from that point of view, then you're more likely to sort of break out of those limitations and act out a lot of things sexually. And it's really a much less... It's a less satisfying place to be. So I recommend in this new religion that you make a joyful sexual life part of it.
You warn in the book about becoming discouraged. Is that a challenge, a pitfall that we can go into in creating this, that we can become discouraged? As I assume we do with any spiritual or religious path.
Yes. Every time I go out in the world to talk, just last night I gave a talk about this book, and people came up to me afterwards with discouragement. You know, they said, well, we've tried so much. We've gone to these different religions and churches and spiritual leaders, and I've tried to go back to the tradition I grew up in, and And I just get discouraged because I can't be myself, or I feel there's too much limitation. It just doesn't, and it doesn't satisfy the longing I have. But I don't even know what I'm looking for. So I do think there is a lot of discouragement out there. And you know, it's been, if you look at the spiritual literature of centuries, people have talked about this kind of a spiritual emptiness and depression that comes along. I think the average person feels it. I see it, you know, like I say, just last evening talking to people, I felt it. So it's out there, and I think part of it is that we've associated religion, formal religion, with holding yourself back, of not doing what you really want to do, as being sort of a negative impact force around you. And I think that's been a huge mistake on the part of the institutional religions. It's time to restore the joyfulness of it and the pleasure of being a religious and a spiritual person. And there's no need for all of those restrictions. No need to make people feel bad about themselves. Or even, you know, some people think that the more they suffer, the better they are, that they're better people because they've suffered. And that leads to a kind of masochism in religion. And again, as a therapist, I see that, and it's very destructive. There really is no place for that.
The name of the book is A Religion of One's Own, A Guide to Creating a Personal Spirituality in a Secular World. It is published by Gotham Books. Thomas Moore, it's always a great pleasure to have you share your insights with us. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I really appreciate your questions, too.
Delight. Thank you very much. Again, okay. The title of the book is A Religion of One's Own. It's published by Gotham Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.